Session number
6175303. Mrs. Jones, tape 3. So what were your initial impressions of this second foster home of yours, or your first foster home in Ashford, that was? Was it a bungalow?
It was a small bungalow with just 2 bedrooms. And they had been under the impression, I think after being asked for about the 3rd time whether they would take an evacuee, they said they would take a little girl because they had 1 daughter of 5 and they would be able to, she would be able to share the bed with her. So on the first night that I arrived, of course, I had to go in the bedroom with this little girl, and I remember there was nowhere to put my clothes. There was just a curtain hanging across one corner and I had to hang my things up there. And later on, while I was there, I remember it being quite cold and damp and the clothes getting a bit mildewy, my school blazer getting a bit mildewy. But on the first night, I knew that they didn't really want an evacuee and that they had sort of been pressed to do so. And so I went out of my way to be quite accommodating. And when I was asked what I would have for a drink before I went to bed, I said, well, I'll have what you're all having, which turned out to be cocoa. And I've always been rather unfortunate with cocoa. It always made me feel rather bilious. Anyway, I manfully drank it down and went to bed. And halfway through the night, I began to think, oh, dear, I shouldn't have had that cocoa. And then a bit later on, I thought, oh, I definitely shouldn't have had the cocoa. And I got out of bed and I couldn't remember where the bathroom was in the dark. And anyway, I don't think I quite made it, but I was fearfully sick. And so you can imagine this poor woman who'd taken somebody into her house. Her daughter was crying because this weird person had been making all sorts of noise and rambling about in the middle of the night. And I really did feel dreadfully sorry for them. But I did apologise in the morning and explain what had happened, and I didn't drink any cocoa after that, of course.
Was she quite kind about it, though?
She was quite kind about it. I think they were churchgoers, and she was the usual kind of... She wouldn't do anybody any harm. But on the other hand, she didn't seem to enjoy life very much. She had an elderly mother who lived a few miles away at Hand Street, and I think probably she was worried about her as well, because eventually she had to go and look after her mother, and that was when I was moved on, but that was after Christmas.
You did mention earlier that it was a very small place, 2 bedrooms, and yes, that they had all the children in with them. Am I right in thinking that after this incident with the cocoa, you had a room to yourself?
That's quite right, yes. They decided that they would put a bed in their own room for the little girl. So they ended up with themselves in 1 bed, the little girl in a spare bed, and the baby in the cot. And there wasn't much room to move around. And I had a room to myself. It was only a single bed, I might add. It wasn't a double bed that I had shared originally with the little girl. It was only a single bed.
So how long would you have been in that billet in all?
Well, it would have been just a few months, really, because by the time we got into Ashford, it was getting on for probably October. And we went home at Christmas time for a few days. Nothing was happening much. Certainly not in the cities. It's happening probably over in France, but it wasn't happening in England. And we were told we could go if we had somebody came and collected us. But of course we didn't do anything like that. My friend and I sort of dodged onto the train and off again, trying to look as if we weren't schoolgirls, and got home. And it was when after Christmas that I got back and I found that Mrs. Dunstan's mother had been taken ill, and she'd decided she'd got to go down and live there, took the 2 children to live there. And by this time, one of the girls that had been billeted at Stubbs Cross had decided to stay at home. Her parents had let her stay at home, and so I was able to move in with Peggy, my friend, at a little tiny bungalow. It looked very little from the outside, but actually inside there were 3 bedrooms and a sitting room and small bathroom, as far as I remember. Yes, small bathroom, but no electricity. We had candles at night for our bedrooms, and they had paraffin lamps in the sitting room.
Yes, before I ask you about that billet, if I could, you know, carry on with Mrs.
Dunstan.
Dunstan, know, how would you sort of sum up your period there? Were you sort of unhappy or?
Oh, yes, quite unhappy. And I took every opportunity to go out. There were various other girls I knew that weren't really great friends of mine, but knew that were round about in bungalows and houses not too far away, and I would say, oh, I'm going off to do my homework with so-and-so, and I'd go off and perhaps do my homework somewhere else. There was no communication, really. She was taken up with the two children. Her husband was a printer with the Kent Messenger, I think, and when he came home, he would be busy writing out his, I suppose, what do you call a sermon, or for the Sunday. And we didn't have anything really much in common. I'd do a bit of dusting and that sort of thing because I felt, well, that's the least I could do. But I don't remember ever doing very much. I didn't do shopping for her or anything like that. I was never asked to do any shopping. It's all a bit hazy, really, that it didn't make a vast impression upon me.
What was his attitude towards you once he'd got over the shock of thinking you were a
just teacher? Toleration, really, yes. Not enthusiastic about having anybody else in the house.
And yet they were religious Christian people?
Well, they were, yes, yes.
Were you involved with their sort of Sunday activity?
No, not at all. He didn't preach anywhere in Ashford. He preached out at a country village at Ham Street, which was probably where they both came from. They were probably village people. And they'd moved to the outskirts of Ashford because of his job. So their ties were all in the village, further out.
Did they all go off on Sunday then for this?
I don't remember the wife and the children. He used to go off on his bicycle to do his lay preaching.
How about the evenings there? Because after all, you would have been there during the winter.
I was.
What did you all do?
Well, listen to the radio to a certain extent, but otherwise I just sat and knitted. And this was the time when I don't know where I got it, but I seemed to have ounces and ounces of grey wool. I must have found it cheaply somewhere because I didn't have a lot of money and decided that I'd use it for Christmas presents for my family. And so my brother, who by that time was evacuated to Gloucester and was cycling everywhere, I knitted him a polo neck pullover, and I knitted waistcoats for my grandmother and my mother and a scarf for my sister. The wool was probably running out by that time. And I suppose my father had cigarettes, I don't really remember, but certainly that's how I spent my evenings. And I suppose I should really have been doing homework, but I can't even remember doing an awful lot.
Were the facilities good enough for homework?
Not really, because there was just the one room, a fairly small room, and the baby's pram was in one corner most of the time till she went to bed, and the little girl would be playing there. So it wasn't very conducive to doing any homework.
Would there have been a fire in the grate?
Yes, there was a fire in the grate, yes. Quite a small one. It didn't make much impression on me, so I couldn't really tell you. I mean, I wouldn't say, oh, there must have been a roaring fire, because they weren't the people that would have had a roaring fire. If they had a fire, it would have been a fairly modest one.
How about things like having baths there?
We had baths once a week, and that you were told when to. I was told when I could have my bath.
That was in a bathroom?
That was in a bathroom, yes. I think that there was a back boiler with it, that the fire heated the water, so it wasn't on tap all the time unless the fire had been, you know, quite well kept in. I imagine we took it in turns to have baths.
And how about things like washing your hair? Were you able to do that yourself?
I was able to do that myself when I thought it needed washing. She didn't take a lot of interest in what I was doing. I think she thought at 15 I was well able to take care of myself.
How about things like your laundry? Did she do your washing for you?
She did most of my washing, yes, she did. Looking back, I can't think why I didn't do any myself, but I certainly didn't. Not there, anyway. And she may have been one of these people that would rather do it in her own way than have somebody messing about in her sink.
Have you any idea if she was paid for having you?
Well, I imagine they were all paid a certain amount, but it was very little. something like 10 shillings a week, wasn't it, I think, or something like that. Certainly wouldn't have gone very far.
Did she ever grumble about you at all? Or criticise you?
I don't think... She did criticise me two or three times. I remember her saying that I was never there. I treated it like a hotel and I... You know, she thought... I think this is probably when I started to do a bit more dusting than I had before.
How about your contact with home? You mentioned your mother arrived and had this toad in the hole.
Yes. Oh, yes, letters, fairly frequent letters. Postage wasn't all that much in those days. And if I really got stuck, I'd send it without a stamp.
And when your mother came for that visit, was that the first visit, can you remember?
I'm sure it was, yes. She had, after the war started, she had begun work at the Ministry of Food. They opened an office fairly near to where we were living. And so she got a job there. Before she was married, she had worked in an income tax office, so she was civil service-minded, and probably that's why we all ended up in the civil service. And so probably she had a little more money. Otherwise, money wasn't very easy to come by. I don't think she could have afforded to come down to see me very often. But having started a job, she probably did have a little bit of extra. And so she came down to see me. I think she probably brought me some extra clothing and that sort of thing. She just came down to see where I was living, I think, just to be nosy.
Did you have any idea of what she thought of the billet? You know, obviously you had complained about the food, as you have explained. Was she generally sympathetic?
Oh, she was generally sympathetic. I think she realised that I missed the company. As I've mentioned before, the family was a close-knit family and we'd all enjoyed life. We didn't go around with long faces and that sort of thing, you know. We saw the funny side of things, but there weren't many funny things to laugh at in Mrs. Dunstan's house.
Did you ever ask to be taken home at that time?
No, I didn't, no. I think I thought that it would be more difficult at home. I mean, I couldn't have left... I shouldn't really have left school at that age. Should I? Oh, yes, I could have done in those days, couldn't I? It didn't occur to me. I think I thought, well, I've got to take the matric in July. I've got to stay until the end, and that was it, you know.
Could I ask you now about this trip home, Christmas 1939... you explained that the school had a system, I believe, whereby children could go home if they had an adult to accompany them. Is that right?
That's right, yes. Mm.
That wasn't possible in your case?
No, I think that we thought it was rather a waste of money, and we were big enough to look after ourselves, and we looking after ourselves in the main. So we got ready and we went to the station. And when we saw a likely-looking family, we sort of tagged ourselves along and got in the carriage with them, and that was it. And nobody questioned it, and we got there and back quite safely, no problem at all. I'm sure, really, the teachers knew that this was going on and didn't notice it if they thought about it.
Can you remember much about that journey home, the first one?
No, not a lot. I think we were so excited. It was nearly Christmas, and we wanted to get home, and we were met at the station in London by our parents and rushed off home.
Were you very excited at the
prospect
of being home?
Yes, very excited then. Yes, we really thought it was... Well, we let ourselves go, I think, when we got home. And being Christmas time as well, it was doubly exciting.
Did they notice any difference in you, your parents? Can you remember?
Well, everybody said how huge I had become, and I pointed out that this was from consuming these large pieces of chocolate and sweets and things, and it certainly wasn't the basic food that I'd been eating. And also probably the healthy air. We were walking quite a lot, so really I don't know why we put on weight, but we certainly did.
Perhaps those white potatoes had
yes,
something to do
probably.
With it. Did you notice much difference in your home in Peckham, coming back sort of later in the war, That would have been the end of...
Not at that time, no. Yeah. There weren't many changes at all. I think probably the only thing was that we lived in a terrace of houses, as I've said, and in front of it had been a small green... Well, we called it the Crescent, I suppose. That's what it was, actually. And by the time I got back for Christmas, all the railings had gone. They'd all come and taken them away for the war effort. Well, that was one big difference, but other than that, I don't think there was really much difference.
Did you have a shelter in your home?
We had an Anderson shelter then, at the bottom of the garden, yes. But at that time it hadn't been used, I think.
And what sort of Christmas was that, the Christmas of 1939? Would you say that most things were obtainable in the shops then?
Yes, it didn't appear to be a shortage of anything. We would have had a chicken because my grandmother kept chickens in the end of the garden. And we would have one of those. I don't think there was anything we were really short of. Not that I remember.
You had presents, did you?
Yes, we would have had presents, but I can't remember anything special that I had.
Was it important for you to be home that Christmas?
Well, it was important. It would have been important for me to be home any Christmas, because Christmas for us was the family time of all the aunts and uncles and putting on these little shows and things like that. You know, we all sang together around the piano, and if we went to my uncle's, he had a pianola, and they all had their own special song that they sang. So Christmas was always special in the family.
So how did you feel about going back to Ashford after Christmas?
Well, I wasn't looking forward to it at all. And I had made up my mind that I would ask for a change of billet, which I didn't have to do in the event because the circumstances had changed, and I went back with my friend, you know, to the bungalow at Stubbs Cross with the elderly people.
Yes, could you tell me now a little more about it? You have described the bungalow, the size of the bungalow. What sort of accommodation did you yourself have? Did you have to share a bedroom?
I shared a bedroom with my friend Peggy, yes. A double bed, quite a small room. Double bed and candles at night when we went to bed.
And did you mind that, sleeping in a double bed?
No, I didn't mind that, no.
She was a very good friend, Peggy, was she?
Yes, she was, yes. We'd been friends at school before, in the same form, before we were evacuated.
And what sort of food did you have there?
Well, different, I would say. Different from anything I'd ever had before. Grandma and Grandad had brought up five daughters, and we called them Grandma and Grandad because they had a grandson who lived with them. His mother was in service somewhere in Kent, and so he lived with them and attended the Ashford Grammar School. Very nice boy, and was quite pleased to have company in the house. Grandma and Grandad grandma served up what would you call old-fashioned food, pig's cheek, pig's trotters. And on a Tuesday was a great day in her life. She went on the bus to the market in Ashford, and she always bought a sheep's head and conger eel. So at Tuesday lunchtime, we always had conger eel and wet mashed potatoes with the liquor from the conger eel. And we did eat it. It wasn't a thing I'd ever had before. And it didn't look too bad. It was just white, and the flesh was quite white, and had this sort of watery stuff and mashed potatoes. And then she'd have half a sheep's head, which she would stew with pearl barley and all sorts of things, which wasn't too bad to taste, but you'd come across the jaw and bits of the jaw. And we'd look at each other and think, ooh, can we eat it or can't we? But we did eat it. Now, in this case, we wouldn't have wanted to hurt the feelings of the old lady, because she was so kind, and she really went out of her way to make us feel welcome. She did homemade cakes for tea and that sort of thing. But another funny thing which I'd never come across before and which horrified me was we had lovely boiled eggs because her daughter kept chickens, and so we had new laid eggs all the time. But in the mornings she would put the eggs in the kettle that was always kept boiling on the grate, and then she'd make the tea with the same water. So sometimes the tea had a most peculiar taste. But other than that, I can't remember. I mean, we didn't feel so hungry in that case. We had to go to school quite early. We had season tickets on the bus. We were given season tickets, which was a blessing, because it meant that we could also nip into Ashford in the afternoon with the same season tickets and go to the cinema or whatever, dodging teachers about, you know. And we did make an effort to keep our bedroom tidy and that sort of thing, and give a help around the house. And, of course, we were getting to the stage where we really should have been doing a lot of work, homework. But as the time went on and the weather became better, we used to, I'm afraid, go into the garden with a deck chair and take our books and then just lay and watch what was going on and look at the apple trees and drift off to sleep. And then we'd think, oh dear, we haven't done any work again. And that's how it went on.
It sounds a lovely life, actually.
It was.
Did you have lovely fruit and vegetables there?
We had very nice fruit, apple pies and things. They had apple trees in the garden. The vegetables don't stand out quite so much because I think the granddad, for instance, was rather elderly and he didn't have a vegetable patch, as I remember. And any vegetables they had were probably from their son-in-law, daughter and son-in-law from further along. So we probably did have quite nice vegetables, but they're nothing that really stuck in my mind.
Yes, you've mentioned the sort of strange food you were introduced there, to there rather. Were there any other sort of customs of theirs that you found rather quaint?
No,
speech patterns?
No, not particularly. They didn't strike me as quaint. They were just a nice old pair who had lived their life, you know, as they wanted to, and they'd enjoyed life, and they'd brought up these daughters, and we didn't meet many of the daughters. I don't know whether they were really scattered. They had one who lived very near to them, and Mrs. Swain, who used to come along, and we'd go there to tea sometimes and that sort of thing. But we were just one of the family. We were treated like their grandson was, and that was it, you know.
Can you remember what they were called?
I can't remember their names at all, no. It was so ingrained in us that they were grandma and granddad, and they looked like a grandma and granddad, and that was it. I don't remember their names at all.
So would you say this country life was completely new for you compared with your previous existence?
Oh, yes, quite. Quite.
How did you get on in the winter? Did you have sort of a cold winter?
We had quite a cold winter, and we had quite a lot of snow when the buses weren't running. And we would have to walk to school, but we used to take so long to get there that by the time we got there, it was almost time for us to walk back again. And we used to play snowballs on the way there and back. And we certainly didn't worry about hurrying to school, I'm afraid.
Did you have any parental visits while you were there with Grandma and Grandpa?
No, not at all. Don't remember any at all. I think we probably went home at Easter in the same way as we had at Christmas. And so we'd be there from going back to school after Christmas till Easter. And then we'd see our family at Easter, and then we went back again. And soon after that, of course, Dunkirk occurred, and the trouble started all over again, rushing us about.
Can you remember how homesick you were while you were an evacuee? Obviously you were a little bit unhappy at your second billet. Very unhappy by the sounds of it.
Yes.
Can you sort of remember?
No, I wouldn't say that I was the type to be actually homesick. I've always taken the view that you have to make the best of what the circumstances are. And so, although I would never have said I wanted to go away anywhere, I was never anxious to go far away, I wouldn't say I was actually homesick. It didn't affect me in a way it did some of the other girls who did go home, just packed their bags and went home.
Did many do that?
I would say about 50 or something like that in the first couple of terms. Some of them, perhaps their parents decided to take them away to relations or that sort of thing.
Do you think going home for the holidays, that unsettled you?
No, I think it helped, really. I knew what the family were doing, and I knew that I could get back quite easily. After all, I'd done it once, so I could do it again if necessary.
So you would think that was quite important, would you, to be able to go home?
I think so, yes, yes. I think we thought ourselves fortunate in not being too far away at that time.
Could I ask you now a little more about schooling? You were saying when you should have been studying beyond matric, you were lying in the orchard and idly watching the apple trees. You have mentioned that you were sharing the Ashfords County School, is that right?
That's right, yes.
Yes, and that you were doing mornings.
We were doing mornings one term and then afternoons the next term.
So how did this work out regarding your curriculum? Were all these subjects able to be covered?
I think the thing was that when you had been at the school in Camberwell, any lessons such as games and art and that sort of thing were cut out when we were evacuated, and they concentrated on mostly on the academic subjects. In our case, I'm not saying that perhaps the younger children didn't have their games and that, but it was considered that it was better for us to concentrate on the subjects we were doing for matric. Or we should have concentrated on the subjects we were doing for matric.
But you actually had tuition in those subjects?
We did, yes.
Yes. From the teachers, your old teachers?
Yes, very few of them didn't come with us. I mean, they all came with us in the first instance, but I think one or two did go back, possibly got other jobs, or maybe they joined up, I don't know. There were some young teachers.
Yes, I was going to ask you if you knew what happened to the children and teachers who weren't evacuated. Was there any schooling in the Camberwell area?
It certainly wasn't in the Datchelow school. It closed down completely.
What was the left like? There it comes. After the day, well, the day actually very good. We had trouble.